Welcome back to the Marketplace. This is our look at the free agency period. And again, all roads leading towards NBL 25. We are at the back end of May. Slowly but surely, the rosters are starting to take a little bit of shape. I'm Jack Heverin. Pete Hooley is the man who casts his eye across all of the rosters, all of the depth charts. Pete, we've got a few more gaps covered than what we had last time.
Yeah, it's exciting. These rosters are continuing to build. Teams, no doubt, looking at every other team's move and trying to combat that one way or another. As you said, we're getting closer to the start of the NBL season. We've still got Summer League to go. We've still got other places where teams are going to try and find those contending puzzle pieces to make that championship contender, but plenty to talk about.
And the man to my left, of course, is the best news breaker in Australian basketball, Olgan Ulich from ESPN.com. We're not far away from Summer League, Olgan, and then by the time that's finished, this thing will start to make a lot of sense.
This season is coming quick and fast. I was just in Perth for the announcement of Hoops Fest as well. So we're getting all these little reminders that the season is fast approaching.
Well, let's jump straight into the Tasmania Jack Jumpers then in terms of what's going on, because this is the team who won the championship and are quite literally going to do it all again with pretty much the same roster. And that now includes Jordan Crawford, who late last week was signed to come back to the Apple Op.
Yeah, we knew that as soon as Will McDowell-White was off the table, and now we know he's off to Alba Berlin on a two-year deal, the Tasmania Jack Jumpers' focus shifted back to Jordan Crawford. Again, their Game 5 hero. Someone who I think is an interesting... I don't think they were completely locked in on him, yeah, because there were some ups and downs with Jordan Crawford. But again, he was their Game 5 hero. He is, I think, really important to what that team did on the offensive end, was being almost like a spark plug at times. But I think they were okay bringing him back. The improvement of someone like Sean McDonald, I think, helps that as well.
I think that he was in a point of his career, professionalism-wise, where he understood how the landscape works in Australia in such a small amount of time since he was here, that they had the chance to get a local point guard talent like Will McDowell-White. They were putting all eggs in that basket. When that didn't eventuate, he knew that that conversation would start up again and go around. But you're right, that Sean McDonald, the emergence of him, I think, allows Tassie to be a bit more confident. But I'm really confident in what Jordan Crawford can do in year two. If you look at the last decade as a whole, anytime an import has that second year and they've had success in the first year, it's very rare for an import to come in and just dominate the whole way without a few ups and downs. Granted, he probably had a few more ups and downs, inconsistencies than some others. But now he understands how it works. He understands other teams around the league, other players. I'm expecting him to come in year two and really make a difference. And that 1-2 punch with Milton Doyle, that can grow again. And they're going to have to do that if they want to repeat.
The interesting part, and it's kind of in our wheelhouse on this show, is to talk about the business side of it, as you both said, that Jordan Crawford understood the situation and was happy to ride it out and see what happened. I think in other sports and in other situations, the player would be within his rights to say, well, I'm out of here. I'm going to go and look for my next opportunity. But this is the, I guess, behind the curtain sort of stuff of how this all plays out.
I think basketball is particularly unique in that situation, because if the Jack Jumpers didn't bring Jordan Crawford back, there are a ton of opportunities around the world for someone like him. So it wasn't as though he was going to be left high and dry. There'd be opportunities there for him. The thing that I'm looking at now is this Jack Jumpers depth chart is largely the same as last year. Yeah. So it's very difficult to not pick them as the championship favorites. Obviously, the Sydney Kings have retooled and Melbourne United has retooled. The Perth Wildcats aren't really going anywhere. But you look at this Tasmania Jack Jumpers team, it's Marcus Lee out. Jordan Crawford stays. It's Gorjok Gak in, and they'll have an opportunity to get an import wing and add that to the mix, potentially have him come off the bench. But this is looking like almost the exact same team with Jack McVane, Will Magne, and Milton Doyle on the top end. It's very tough to look past him as a championship favourite early on.
I agree, but I still think they need to nail that last piece, right? Because every other team, you mentioned Sydney Kings, every other team now is trying to, okay, they won the championship. If they're going to be the benchmark, how do we go one step better than that? And what does Tassie do to get one step better? Granted, as good as Tassie are with this team and how good Scott Roth coaches, they know that they can't just produce what they did last year. They need to go a step further. The league continues to get better. They've got to make sure they add that. And that's going to come with, offensively, they were great last year compared to their first 2 years. Defensively, where does the consistency come from? A healthy Will Magne, we know that. But that's where the Jordan Crawford signing comes in, right? How does Scott Roth work that, knowing that his best defensive unit, his best team is probably with Sean McDonald in there, but then you still need to tick the scoreboard over? There's plenty of chess pieces to work, but you're right. If you're a Tasmania Jack Jumper fan, you're stoked as well, because the culture is just going to continue to stay strong.
And I don't think we're going to harp on Sean McDonald now. I don't think he's their best player, but he might be their most important player. Mm-hmm. Because when it comes to what you're talking about and shuffling lineups and things like that, he can play at the point if they need him to. He can play on the wing if they need him to, like he did in Game 5. Mm. The positional versatility of Sean McDonald is huge for this Jack Jumpers team.
The other bit of news from a Tasmanian perspective while we're on the reigning champions is Will Magne. He's currently or about to head overseas, Olgan, and do some workouts.
Yeah, so he's got a confirmed workout with the Atlanta Hawks that he'll go over to America to do shortly, and there are four other teams. His eyes are intent on the Boomers, right? I've been told he's desperate to make it onto that final 12, so he'll be part of that Boomers camp at the end of June. But he's heading over to have a look at those NBA opportunities, and we'll see if one of those maybe comes to fruition.
Should we be a little nervous?
So I tell you what, if you're a Jackhammer fan, if you are nervous, you probably should be, right? With how good he's looked since he's been healthy, there's a reason he's getting these opportunities now. We forget how young he is just because we've seen him grow. We've seen him come through the Bullets. We've seen him have the taste of the Pelicans and going to Perth. There's a reason why he'll get these opportunities. And if something eventuates, it wouldn't surprise me to have that kind of big local talent. We're seeing it all around the world coming up. Jordy Hunter, Mitch Creek, there's the eyes on from Asia as well, not just America. It's going to come for a player of his caliber. So if it does make you nervous, it's a good reason, but also it's rewarding and it's what we want to see from our stars is getting those chances.
So the Brisbane Bullets, they've had a few things happening since the last time we got together here on the Marketplace. Firstly, is an import signing. Keandre Cook comes into the lineup as an import guard, played in Germany last season, averaged the best part of 14.5 points a game, 4.3 rebounds, shot the ball nicely as well.
That was the thing that they wanted to replace with Chris Smith, the shooting part of that skill set. The other thing that they wanted to add on top of that was athleticism. It was something that we're going to hear from the Bullets a lot about how much they were lacking that last season. And so when it comes to the recruitment and the roster construction this offseason, that was something they wanted to lean into. They feel like Keandre Cook is someone who can bring that as well as the shooting.
There's a bit of versatility when you look at this depth chart right now. And we're looking at it and it does have Shannon Scott's name on it, which we'll talk about. But Keandre Cook is someone you can throw around in different positions. Sam McDaniel's going to start on this team. It's all about what happens. He's going to have to. He's one of the best defensive players in the league. And I think he's going to take another step forward next year on the offensive end. Because again, I'm looking at this roster. They need some impact on the scoring. Tyler Harrison is phenomenal at what he does. Josh Bannon is looking like he's going to have to be a 15-plus point scorer a night on this team, which can he do? Absolutely. Yeah. A lot to ask for a second-year player, but I'm looking at the rest of this roster, and again, the Shannon Scott situation, which we'll talk about now, spoke to Stu Lash on NBL Now, and he understood, and you spoke about it, Olgan, the professional side of this, and they're having the conversation with Shannon Scott's party, and they understand that where this Brisbane Bullets team is looking to go, how that looks for Shannon Scott.
Well, while we're on the subject of Shannon Scott, that interview that you spoke about, Pete, on NBL Now is now live on the NBL website and all of the NBL social media channels. Let's take a listen to what Stu Lash, the general manager of basketball operations, had to say about Shannon Scott.
We have Shannon Scott under contract as well for next season. We're having conversations with Shannon and his camp on, you know, what that looks like. And, you know, Shannon's a professional and understands, you know, what's expected of him. So those conversations obviously will be kept internally, but, you know, it's a part of what we're trying to do for next season, is to, you know, figure out where we want to be on that point guard spot.
You called this a while ago.
Well, we knew this a while ago. That's what the intel suggested. The Bullets team is really interesting because a lot of it is based on hope. It's the hope that...
dangerous.
Right. So usually when you build a roster, you go one of two ways. It's the same thing in life, right? You can do it based on hope, or you can do it based on what's demonstrated, right? In this case, it's Josh Bannon. The hope is that he can lift his game to be someone who could be a 15-8 guy consistently. And then is Casey Prather, is he going to look like 2018 Casey Prather? Is Deng Adel going to look like 2018 Deng Adel with the Cleveland Cavaliers? They brought these guys in. They've loaded up on these guys who may turn out to be really good, but it's hope. It's based on what they are hoping these guys will be, as opposed to what they've demonstrated recently. That's why it's an iffy place to be in right now.
And again, because of that, all you mentioned with Shannon Scott, if Shannon Scott, what you're talking about, is unlikely to return, if they figure something out there, they need that impact point guard. I think Shannon Scott's a terrific player. We saw that in patches last year, more patches when he was at Cairns. But this team, you're talking about based on hope, the pieces they have, and removing Nathan Sobey is a high-volume scorer. Tyler Harrison is phenomenal at what he does, but they're going to need an impactful point guard, not a facilitator. They need someone who can put some points on the board as well. Sam McDaniel, again, we know what he brings. They need a Travis Trice type, who at one point, talking to a couple of players around the league, he had shown interest in potentially wanting to come back to the NBL. This was about 3-4 months ago. That didn't eventuate. He's going to have plenty of offers for good reason around the league, but he keeps in touch with the NBL. They need a piece like that, put a lot of points on the board, can get people involved.
It's someone proven. And also, we have to understand that there is money there as well.
Mm.
They saved up a lot of money. They put it to the side for Will McDowell-White. They did not get him. Someone like Keandre Cook, I don't think the market dictates that he's a high-money guy. And so they should have a ton of cash left over.
Mm.
We'll see what happens with Shannon Scott and a buyout and if some cash has to go to that situation. But they've got money left over for a really, really high-level point guard.
It seems like this could be, they talk about patience with a lot of these teams, this could be like one of those summer league opportunities where the fringe, maybe two-way, or someone who's had a chance and just on the edge, they cost a lot more. You have the money to go and say, hey, we've got more money than we would have usually. This is an opportunity to come and lead this team because they're going to need someone to put a lot of points on the board.
Shout out to Justin Schuller as well, who late last week had the option picked up. So he'll now coach for a guaranteed 3 years at the Bullets. And I guess in many ways, this is the first proper chance that he's got to put a roster together and build a culture that goes with it.
The culture's the one. They're in a great space culture-wise. You look at what they've built and what they came from 2 years ago. A lot of strides forward. Yes, the basketball is inconsistent, but you're right. To be able to have that, that comes with consistency. That comes with retaining the core. We keep talking about with local Aussies. They've got the bench. Isaac White's primed for more opportunity. We talk about Casey Prather coming back and being healthy. So there are all these signs that are in the positive direction, but some big moves still to be made.
We're still feeling the after effects of Motti Mayor's departure from the New Zealand Breakers. Shattering news for everyone in the NBL. Universally liked, universally respected, but he's taking another opportunity, which is a great one for him and his family. We wish him all the best. Let's just go back and have a little look at what Motti had to say at his farewell press conference late last week.
This is much harder than post-game press conference. The decision to leave the NZ Breakers was as hard of a professional and personal decision as it gets. This club, the people that work in it, the people that it connects to in the community have meant everything to me over these past 5 years, even like all of you. As a coach, your time with any club is really measured. My biggest aspiration when I came here 5 years ago was to leave the place better than it was when I found it. Through the joint efforts of many, many, many people in the front office, in management, ownership, front office, back office, coaching staff, performance staff, medical, media, and players, I feel that's exactly what we've been able to do. The past 2 days have been filled with reflection, and I think the club is in a good place, both where it is on the court, where it is in kind of behind the scenes, and where it is in the community. And I'm proud of the things that we've done here over these past 5 years that I've put in there. To Matt, Lisa, ownership, management, I'll be forever grateful for the opportunity to coach the Breakers. It was a lifelong dream that came true, and I cherish every moment and every memory and every challenge that we kind of met together, and this was something that I will carry along in all my endeavors and challenges that are yet to come. To all the players that I've been lucky enough to coach, I'm grateful for everything you've done. Your effort, your commitment, your willingness to sacrifice and do for me, but also for the team and the club and the city and the country and everything that the Breakers represent. You are always the stars of the show, and without you, nothing is possible. The relationships and the friendships that we forged over these years will last me forever, and I'm really looking forward to the next time that our paths cross. To the players of 24-25, you're about to have the time of your life. You get to experience New Zealand. You get to experience Auckland. You get to experience game day at Spark. And more than anything, you get to experience Breaker Nation. Embrace everything that's coming towards you. Enjoy it. Cherish it. Let it lift you. And I'm sure you're going to perform just a little bit better than what we did in my first year. To our fans, know that day in and day out, I've done all that I could do to make you proud. Know that every person that walks into Atlas Place every morning does the same. This place has developed the culture and the ability to go all out all the time. Everybody who works for this organization gives it everything it's got every day. And the reason that they do it is to represent our fans and Breaker Nation in the right way. The moments that we've shared together at Spark, I'll cherish forever. And I thank you so much for your love and support over the last few hours and over the past few years. I'm joining you now and being the Breakers' biggest fan. And waiting for the championship next season. Thank you.
It was sad. I mean, the press conference it was compelling viewing. Everything that Modi does is compelling viewing. It's going to be really a shame that he's not here.
Yeah, I said it on the NBL Now episode that we did right in the aftermath of that news happening. He was the face of that program.
Yeah.
He's the heart and soul of that program. And so, and you could feel it there too. It's the way he carries himself. It's what we saw on the court with what he brought to the play style of that team. It's what he brought off the court and how loved he was by his players. And he was the reason why certain players signed, certain players re-signed. So these are very big shoes to fill.
It's, shattering is one way to put it, because we all got along with him so well. I love to have a conversation with him. I think it's a reward for him as well. He deserves an opportunity like this to be paid and to go and have those other opportunities. I will look down the barrel and say that, Modi, I will be sending you a tab for an invoice for Summer League dinner. You promised me, so if you're not going to be there, I will send it to you and I'll make sure that you pay that.
I guess the first question that happens in a situation like this is what happens to the players and what are the players thinking? Parker Jackson Cartwright, pretty quick to get on social media and say to the Breaker Nation that he's going nowhere, as you can see on screen now. But I mean, Pete, you're the player in this situation. Olgan, you're the man who covers the news and you've got relationships with players.
I've played basketball before.
Is it?
I played at some point.
Yeah,
so you're going to be on the huddle with Pete.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, very short episode. Yeah. I would what goes through the players' mindsets right now? What are they thinking in this situation?
It's tough, right? And you see it from a lot of different, not just professional habits in college, a lot as well. So when you have those conversations with the coaches, when you sign a contract, the whole conversation is, yes, monetary is one thing, but it's what role is going to be on the team. And when you have one coach and then that changes, whoever comes in, that can be a completely different role and style of play. So it can be a little nervous. And also, normally, you have a club that, say it's the New Zealand Breakers and Park Jackson Carwo, say, look, if this is not where now you want to go down, you work together and say, we're not going to potentially hold it to you. If you want to go elsewhere. So for PJC to come out and say, no, I'm going to be sticking with this, is huge for the Breakers, and it speaks to the organisation and everything. The two that I'm interested in, Mitch McCarron and Mojave King, Mitch McCarron in particular, another contract that he signed and a coach is gone before he gets there. It's tough to have to deal with. They are professionals and they understand this is the landscape. But the next one to come in, geez, there's just massive shoes to fill, not just from a head coaching role. Modi Mayo was so much more head coach for the Breakers.
Yeah, the Mitch McCarron and Mojave King, they both signed with the 36ers, thinking that Connor Henry would be their head coach, and then he was replaced by CJ Bruton, right? So this is the second time in back-to-back contracts that this has happened to these guys. The other one is Jonah Bolden, who is still sort of an enigma in Australian basketball, where some people think extremely highly of him, some don't think as highly. I remember as free agency was approaching, I got a text from someone in the Breakers, basically just asking, is Jonah the best center in the league? Like, what are the skill sets that other centers do that he doesn't do better than them? And I spoke with Modi about him, and he expressed the same sort of thing. And so for someone like him to be going into a situation where he thought it'd be a head coach in Modi who believes in him and his skill set, the same with Mitch McCarron, the same with Mojave King, for it to be a different head coach, it's an intriguing situation there. The one thing I'll say is that this head coach is going into a situation that he knows what's in front of him.
Yeah.
It starts with Parker Jackson Cartwright. I think that softens the blow for whomever comes in as head coach, because for the most part, you know the play style.
Yeah.
You can see the depth chart on the screens right now. And as you can see with the depth chart, it's almost there. And save for a couple of import spots still to come, this is starting to take shape to be a pretty decent roster.
And no one's gone anywhere either.
Yeah.
From everyone I spoke to, everyone is locked
in. Whoever the coach. And I think that having these gaps is, you're talking about softening the blow, they're in a very good position, right? If you've got those two other pieces filled, it becomes, I think, tougher for a coach to come in and then have to work with that. There's still enough pieces missing for a coach to put his imprint on this team and a style of play. And you mentioned Modi Mayo talking about Jonah Bolden. When I spoke to him on NBL Now, he could not wait for the opportunity to show what Jonah can really do at his full potential. So this is definitely one to watch. I got a text a couple of weeks ago from somebody saying that Modi Mayo and Japan have linked up, and I was just like, there's no way. I was like, there's no way. I was like, surely not.
And so we move forward now. The Breakers, from what I understand, have had dozens of resumes kind of
surprised. Yeah,
come their way. It is a job that is highly sought after in international basketball. We've spoken a lot about the people who make decisions for that franchise and how important it is to sort of link up with those guys and understand that you know that they're going to get you high-level imports. And this is a franchise that people do want to be a part of. And so, they, again, we've spoken ad nauseum about the network and how wide the net is going to be cast here, and I imagine that's still going to be the case. It'll be America, it'll be Europe, it'll be locally New Zealand and Australia, but it'll be a wide net.
I don't think it needs to be. I don't think it needs to be. If you talk about how high profile and everything, if you're going to free up some money, whatever it is, Paul Inari is the guy. If I'm looking at, I mean, he's had success wherever he's been. You talk about local and bringing it back. I'll be having that conversation with him. Whatever it takes to bring him back to the Breakers, to bring him back to New Zealand and to build on that. And he was assistant coach for me a couple of years ago. We kind of forget about him because a lot of coaches go overseas for that well-deserved opportunity. I'll be picking up the phone saying, you know the league, you know the players, you know everything about the Breakers. What does it take to bring you back? And that would be just a huge pickup if they can get it done. No one's mentioned it. This is just me. What I'd like to see selfishly, he's a great human being as well.
We spoke about teams that are waiting until Summer League to land their imports and decide where they're going next. Not so much for the Cairns Taipans. Adam Ford said that he's had his eye on one man in particular for a little while, and that's Rob Edwards, who lands with G League experience and someone that looks as though, on paper and on the early vision we've seen, is going to suit the Adam Ford model really, really well.
Yeah, so this is a high-level scorer, someone who can really shoot the ball. When we last linked up on the marketplace, I implied that they had something in the offing, and it was someone that Adam Ford really wanted, but from what I understand, he didn't want to jump the gun. It wasn't completely done yet, and he really wanted Rob Edwards. Had a little cup of coffee with Oklahoma City Thunder, was with Oklahoma Blue, spent time across the NBA G League, and so is maybe someone who hasn't produced at a crazy high level across international basketball, but there is the mold of a scoring guard that could potentially do well here.
So you like this fit?
I like the fit. Whether the player is of the level and how impactful he can be at the NBL level, I think that's still, we have to wait and see. And I think it's
normal.
I think it's the same with Tanner Groves in Cairns. I think it's the same with Keandre Cook in Brisbane. These are players who haven't demonstrated a huge amount at a high level. This may be the level where they break out, right? But as of now, I'm waiting and seeing. But as far as the fit goes, I think they needed a player like that next to Taron Armstrong.
I think this really worked. Again, Adam Ford is so unique in the way that he recruits and he does his due diligence, different to a lot of other coaches because of what the market is in Cairns and the style of play that he likes to go with and calls it the factory in terms of the youth coming through and giving second chances. I like this, and I think you're going to find these can be breakout opportunities for guys like this and to find a consistent home. And remember now, the money side is the Cairns Taipans have for imports is a lot more even than what they had last year. Last year, they had a lot in Tajimiko, Patrick Miller, and then they had to spend very little on Josh Roberts. This way, they want it to be a bit more even across the board and kind of spread it around. But if Adam Ford's saying that he's got his eye on someone and he's chasing them for a while, there's a reason for that. And I think we'll see that when the NBL 25 begins.
When you look at their depth chart, as you do with all of the teams, what does it tell you? What jumps out at you for good or for bad?
I mean, well, I think we're going to see, they saw at the back end of last year with Taron Armstrong, right? He started to really hit his stride at the back end of NBL 24. The key is to be able to now push that to another year. You understand the professional style of the NBL, the travel, all of that, what it takes, and what are the other unique veteran guards in the league. They're going to be up and in. They're going to make you earn it. I think he's going to come in with a different level of confidence. But the key to the Taipans, and it was last year, Sam Woodenberg. Right, he had a struggle in his second year, and he understands that he's been dealt some horrible injuries over his short professional career. But for him and Cairns to really get back on the front foot, he's going to be one of their leading guys, and you kind of put some pieces around that. So Adam Ford's a mastermind when it comes to all of this, but he's going to need those players, those young players, to come in with veteran confidence. I think he can instill that.
So a few things. The Taron Armstrong piece is almost separate. He was really solid at the G League camp recently. He worked out with the Sacramento Kings recently as well. So they are obviously of two minds. They are hopeful that he will be back for next season, but obviously would be happy for him if he gets
there is a legitimate chance that he can get a two-way contract from everything I've been told as well.
There is a chance of that. And so they have that third import spot. I'm told they'll keep that up their sleeve. If Taron Armstrong gets a two-way contract, then they have money there for an import point guard. If not, then it's another complimentary wing for Taron Armstrong. I think the balance of this team is just way better than last season.
Yeah.
Last season it was almost like we have to keep Taji McCall, and it felt very clunky. Like you wanted Taron Armstrong, but I don't think he really worked particularly well with Taji McCall and Matt Miller. With this roster, it's you have someone like Taron Armstrong who you know you're leaning into. You're going to surround him with shooting, and you have rollers now as well. You've got the shooting of Sam Woodenberg and Tanner Groves. You've got the
Galloway
rolling and Galloway shooting of Kyrie Galloway. Yeah. AK Gat can shoot it too, but you also have high level rollers too. And so when it's Taron Armstrong coming off on balls, getting into that hostage dribble and making decisions, I think this team is way better suited for someone like him to be able to make decisions than it was last season.
It's not, but it's also not fun to be sitting there watching him do well overseas too, knowing that they might have to change. But from things that I'm hearing around as well, there's a legitimate chance that a phone call could come. And I think, as you said, Cairns, it wouldn't shock Cairns. So they are prepared if that's eventuates.
Can I mention one more thing? The end of last season, we saw things sort of collapse a little bit with the Taipans, and that seemed like it was happening internally. From what I understand, at the top of the list when Adam Ford was making decisions this offseason when it came to the roster construction was getting good guys.
Mm.
Just making sure that whatever happened last year, whether it was egos that came into play or anything of that nature, the priority was getting good guys. And that's what you have in someone like Tanner Groves and Bob Edwards and these guys.
I think that's a good decision for all parties concerned. Let's get to Melbourne United. Intriguing in many respects what's going on with Jack White, which is fantastic to have him signed at Melbourne. Obviously retained his rights, so they've just extended that opportunity, which is great for them. You're about to see the depth chart that still does have Luke Travis on the depth chart as well. Is there a world where they have them both, or is it more likely that they have neither of them? What's going on here?
I'd put it at a 5% chance or less
for both.
They have both.
Mm.
That's pretty small.
Very little.
Won't happen.
One of them is more than likely not going to be there. But I would also put it at maybe a 60% chance that they have neither.
Ooh, because, that's interesting.
Because United has approached this offseason with the assumption, with the expectation that Luke Travers may get some sort of opportunity with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Jack White has signed his contract with NBA outs. They're relatively loose. So if he gets a two-way contract and he has a desire to take it, then he can go and do that. That NBA out exists there. Jack White just finished last NBA season or this NBA season with a 10-day contract with the Grizzlies. He's very much in line to get a two-way contract. So there is a fairly decent chance that they end up with neither.
And they understand that too. And I think maybe a lot of NBL, Melbourne United fans especially don't quite understand that, because when the signing was announced for Jack White, it looked great. But as we mentioned, like, this is something that they understood was down the path if he was to come back. And he would be more than happy to play here. And speaking of him, he wants to win a title for NBL. I know he won an NBL championship, but he was injured at the time. He wants to feel that. He wants to be able to be impactful on the floor. But because he's had the foot in the door at numerous places in the NBA, it becomes a lot more enticing, right, to get those opportunities. And he's won an NBA championship. Regardless of stepping on the floor with that, he was impactful within that organization and the people talk around the NBA offices. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But I'm with you. Selfishly, I want to see him back in the league. I still think there's a very good chance that he will be in the NBL. But I also think there's a strong chance that that comes calling.
And in a world where Jack White does remain, which is still a very distinct possibility, of course, that is, I don't know if it's necessarily an upgrade from Luke Travers, but I think it fills a lot of needs with regard to his skill set compared to Luke Travers. That probably helps this team a little bit more. The shooting is the uptick in shooting that you get from White to Travers is, I think, significant. Defensively, you have similar versatility, you have similar size, athleticism, and you just have a more refined player because Jack White's 5 years old.
He's a needle mover, Jack White, in terms of what he can bring. Same with Xavier Cooks. They impact winning in the same way, but they're two vastly different players. And I think that's exactly what you get. And I watched it work out down at Hoop City last week. He's coming in between and going around from home in Traralgon, and he looks in great shape. His mind's all focused on the Boomers, which is interesting. We only focus on the NBL season and everything, but for these guys who dream is to be an Olympian and they're focused on that and then potentially NBA opportunities, there's so much to have to consider and trying to focus on just putting a ball in a basket. So you think for them, you feel for them, but I think he's in a very good position.
And he's going to be your very special guest on The Huddle next episode, which will be live in the next couple of days as well. So there's a bit of an idea of what's going on at Melbourne United and the teams who have made moves in the last week or so. Oh, and when we sat at this very desk and we did the Marketplace Live on the opening day of free agency, we had the computers running and we had fans sending in all of their questions and their thoughts that they had. It was really interesting to see the questions and the volume of questions about the Next Star program and how it's now seen as a legitimate use of a roster spot. It's not a token gift. It's not a marketing campaign or anything like that. It is a genuine way to put a good player into your roster for the season. It may be a little bit too early, but it would be remiss of us not to talk about the Next Stars program heading into NBL 25.
Yeah, NBL teams, they're learning how to utilize the Next Stars program. I think teams they're ideally not getting kids anymore, and they're generally American kids. The five-star recruits coming out of high school just aren't palatable for NBL teams because having to rely on a player to be a backup point guard, for example, who may not be ready for this level. That's a really tough thing to commit to. What we saw last year was someone like Alex Saar, Bobby Klintman, Alex Tui,
Mantas
Rutsdivicius, these European guys, players who have maybe played a season of college already, played a season of pro already, Australians who understand how basketball is played in this part of the world and in the FIBA game, they're the ones who are more impactful. And so that's who teams are chasing early on. And there are names out there in the ether. Discussions are currently underway. And for the most part, these are Australian, European, not necessarily high school Americans.
And Liam Sandler is doing a fantastic job with these conversations start really early. And again, when the Next Stars program began, right, it was kind of like, we've got these players. And okay, so Melby Knight, you're taking this one. Taddy, you take this one. Now you've done a great job of, you have those conversations early, and then teams, once they're putting their roster together, like, oh, we're kind of missing something here. And then they find a next star to fill that and be impactful. That's how they become impactful, to kind of give teams what they need going forward rather than trying to fit a circle into a square, which actually does work now that I mention it. Anything else that's bigger than that, but you know what, to try and get that to work. And that's why Liam's done a great job with the Next Stars program, and we'll see some impactful ones, I'm sure.
And we can point to some examples too. AJ Johnson, his stock is rising, and he could very well be a late first round pick, which would be great for him. But for an NBL team, a professional basketball team, having to rely on someone like that as your backup point guard, in the case where it doesn't work and he's maybe not ready as soon as you think he'll be, then that throws your whole roster into whack, right? Because out of whack. Because you've got an entire position there that you're relying on a kid.
Yeah.
Whereas if you get someone who's proven himself in Europe, someone like Mantas Rutsdivicius, allotting a spot for him isn't too much of a risk because you sort of know what he's going to bring to the table. From what I understand, the Tasmania Jack Jumpers are a team that seem more than likely to get in on the Next Stars game after being out of it for a little bit. They had Mikhailovsky a few years ago.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say their first iteration didn't go well.
It went, horribly.
But that's because, again, you're trying to fit a piece in that wasn't the way that
would go.
And then, again, he's playing very well in a different situation. But now it's like, okay, Scott, what do you need? How do you make this championship contender go that extra piece we're talking about? And you find someone to fit that.
So it seems like they're going to be in on the Next Stars game. And the Perth Wildcats, they theoretically have two spots to fill, right? Which is an import and a Next Stars spot. And they have their eye on a Next Star right now. They're basically waiting for some chips to fall. The NBA draft is coming up, and basically whatever happens with the NBA draft and potential people withdrawing, whether it be the May 30 deadline for college guys to withdraw, those guys in the portal, or whether it's the June 17 deadline for pros to withdraw from the draft. Perth Wildcats.
You've got a name, don't you? Can't say.
Doesn't matter what
happens. I might have the same name.
They have a player that they're keeping their eye on, and they are just waiting and seeing on if this guy's going to stay in the draft or if he might withdraw his name, and they can say to him, look what we just did with Alex Saar with this big European kid.
Teasing everybody.
What we could do with you.
You know, the Red Army, they're impatient. Yeah. They don't know what's going on.
That's how you get some mentions. I know the name too. Give me some mentions.
So while we're on the subject of the Perth Wildcats, here's a little bit of a look at their depth chart as it stands right now. Since our last episode, not a lot of movement, and we did flag this right from the start of free agency with Perth, that there wouldn't be a lot of business going on because of so many guys that were coming back on second or third years of their deals. What do they need, Pete? Right now, as it stands and as you look at it, what is the number one priority with an import slot for this team?
Well, we look at the depth chart the way it is. I don't expect that to be the way they start game one of NBL 25. And we've spoke about it a little bit. I caught up with Danny Mills for the NBL Now podcast as well. And you're expecting Doolittle to play the four, and they can bring in an import on the wing, right? And import, again, the versatility to be able to have a 3 and 4 import as well, and Doolittle can play the same. But they need some scoring in that, I believe. And they're looking at that saying, Keanu Pinder, we know where he's going to bring another year with Bryce Cotton. He's going to get better. Bryce Cotton's going to continue to get better somehow. He's the benchmark in the competition. But how do you take pressure off team? How do you stop teams doubling Bryce every time he gets the ball? You find an impactful wing to really come in and kind of take the pressure off. Remember, Jordan Usher wasn't supposed to be that player. Jordan Usher was coming. He said he was going to be a defensive player of the year. Had 35 in the first game and then kind of went to on an offensive mindset. But if they can bring in someone who's designed to be more of an offensive threat and can play defense as well, you don't just want just the one side, I think that's going to really help balance out their team.
And from what I understand, the chunk of money that they have allotted for that wing spot is higher than most people think.
Right.
Okay.
So there is a good chance that it'll be a high-level, impactful guy. Obviously, that wasn't the case with Usher last season, but based on the intel I have on that, and also what we understand about how much they spent last season when it comes to just their overall cash spend, this is a team that is willing to spend money to win, which is a great thing.
If
you spend money and don't...
Well, they were right there, right? They made a semi-final series, so it's like you don't have to change too much. Just like Tassie, we're right there, but let's just get one step better. And what is that one step? And Danny Mills said they're going to be very patient in what that step is.
Since we caught up on the last episode of the Marketplace, the Adelaide 36ers have added a little bit of local depth. They have said right from the start that they wanted to have a bit of South Australian flavour and character to this team under Scott Ninnis, who of course bleeds Adelaide 36ers and has done from day one. They've added Ben Grisky as a backup big, got some local depth here. He's a big boy too at 6'11". Jacob Rigoni comes into this team as well for a little bit of depth, but there's still a few gaps to fill as far as the starting lineup's concerned.
Pete, I'm intrigued.
Always you are.
We have a situation where Ben Grisky, Jacob Rigoni ostensibly fill out the last two roster spots of this team. That brings them up to 9 locals. That means they can only get 2 imports. So that's one thing that's worth keeping an eye on. Uh-huh. Only 2 imports for this team. Up until this point, all of the intel suggests that they were going for 3 imports.
Yeah.
That's what everyone around the team thought. It's what I was hearing. So that seems to be off the table. And then you have Isaac Humphries, who was one of the elite players in the NBL toward the end of last season. But someone who, what happens if he sprains an ankle? What happens if he gets in foul trouble? The only backup to him is Ben Grisky, who... hasn't graduated from college.
Or Alex Starling as a small ball.
Or Alex Starling as a small ball 5. And I don't mind Starling as a small ball 5, but someone like Grisky, who I don't know is ready to be an impact guy in the NBL just yet, I'm intrigued on the roster construction here.
Yeah, it shocked me a little bit. Oh, I thought that might have been a development player opportunity, but again, going down the 3 import route and getting an import 4 man who can play backup 5s you need. That they're probably going to have to still do that, right? You look at the gaps, they still need to come in with an impactful point guard. We talk about Brisbane, that Travis Trice type. They need to nail that. They were going after a McDowell White, the money that they should have ready to spend on that. They have to go out there and get a player who, one, is an absolute force to be reckoned with in NBL 25, but also someone that complements your 2 elite locals in DJ and Isaac Humphries. So they've got to go out there, scour everything to bring somebody in who you've got to bring in. New Zealand nailed it with Parker Jackson-Carr.
Totally.
Top 3 MVP. They need to find someone who's going to be in a top 3 MVP caliber conversation to help complement these guys. And then a 4 man who I think has to be able to play backup 5 minutes potentially. And then, to be honest, if you're looking at that, they bring in a 4 man. You need a 4 man who's playing 35 minutes a game. And 20 of those will be at the 4, and 20 of those are going to be at 15 at the 5, and you very rarely go small ball.
And I think this league has shown, certainly in the last decade, if you don't have a really good 4 man, you're going to find it pretty hard in this league with the way that the games are played.
It's having a good 4 man. It's also, it's very difficult these days for teams to have no minutes spots. So basically, spots on a team that are designated 0 minutes. You're there for vibes, basically. From looking at this, Rigoni was a DP last season. Grisky is coming off a season with a low major. It's very difficult to see where significant minutes are going to be pumped into these guys. When you look at two more things, who starts for this team?
It's got to be Lat Mayen.
Either Lat Mayen or Nick Marshall.
Well, this is Nick Marshall's chance.
Please play Nick Marshall.
Oh, he's going to have to. He's going to.
Love of God.
He's going to have to, and he's had little spurts and probably hasn't taken it as well as he would have liked. But now there is legitimate. Whoever they get now, this is his chance to have a breakout campaign because, one, the opportunity's there, but two, they need it. They need him to do this.
And so, let's say it's Nick Marshall or Lat Mayen starting at the 3. When you look at just sort of the ins and outs of this team, effectively it's Kyron Galloway out for Lat Mayen, but then it's Jacob Wiley out for Jacob Rigoni, and then it's Toy Smith-Milner out for Ben Grisky. Huh. So I'll leave it to the audience to decide whether those are upgrades in those spots or whether that fills needs that this team has. I still think they're very thin at the 5 spot. It'll be interesting to see how they flesh out the rest of this roster, considering it's 2 imports.
Well, they've got 2 of the best locals in the competition, right? So, again, what happens to these last 2 pieces? If they can nail those, we're going to be having a completely different conversation.
Sydney Kings went really hard early in free agency, so it's been a little bit of a wait and see for them. They are one team that are going to wait and see what happens at Summer League. Xavier Cooks is now official as of about an hour before we started recording today, so they're in pretty good shape right now, the Kings. They're just... to borrow one of your phrases, they're just sitting back and chilling at the moment.
And that's the luxury they get for doing all their work early, making sure they got their high-level guy, Xavier Cooks. And so then it's, again, just sandwiching what they have as far as their starters with an import point guard who I'm told will be a high-level guy. and an import center. So it's that. And then they can wait and see with that last spot.
Yeah.
They largely filled a lot of their needs. Maybe there's some room for more depth at the five spot. Maybe they need some more size. Maybe they need another shooter. But it seems like they're in a really healthy spot right now.
They could, I mean, without even adding pieces, they could finish top four with the roster they had.
It's very, very good.
So this is, again, Chris Pongras is a genius, right? So again, I just think he hates to stress. So he says, you know what? I don't want to stress, so I don't need to. Let me do all this work early. And yeah, the patience is going to be key for them.
And I'm fascinated to see that they've built a roster that is star-laden, as we know, but there are some really talented young kids on this roster who are going to learn the right way under Brian Goorjian and to play with Xavier Cooks and a guy like Bull Qual, who's a hard worker. Sean Bruce is a culture guy. I'm fascinated to see, like 12 months from now, what their kids look like on this roster and how they've developed too.
Yeah, because these are guys who I think have high ceilings, but on a team with Xavier Cooks and a high-level point guard, they don't have the pressure of having to reach that so early.
Yeah.
And that can be a good thing. We've seen with Adam Ford, with the Cairns Tigers fans, being thrown in the deep end can be a good thing. But in this instance, you'll have a point guard and Xavier Cooks where the ball is going to be. Mm. And then Alex Tui, he can show off his complementary game. Tyler Robertson, Kelly Lupepe. Seeing how these guys work as ancillary players on this team that is very talented on the top end, I'm intrigued. And then I'm interested to see the growth of Bull Qual.
Yeah.
Where he fits in this. I suppose Liam, out in Perth for the announcement of Hoops Fest, and he spoke about the idea of understanding the skill set he has and the talent he has, but learning it in the schemes and the systems of Brian Goorjian on both ends of the floor. He's ready to improve his game and grow as well. So how he grows could determine where this Kings team finished.
Are we right in assuming that if we're at this point now and Jalen Adams hasn't re-signed with Sydney, that they're probably going in a different direction?
I wouldn't. I think they're still two different scenarios. If Jalen Adams could very well re-sign, I don't think he will, but I wouldn't say he's off the table right now.
Speaking of which, Illawarra, when we spoke last time, they just signed Tyler Harvey on a three-year deal, which is fantastic to see that he's going to be around for a long time. He's a great piece in this league. No movement on Gary Clark as yet?
From what? And every day that passes makes me think that it's not happening. The money was just too high. There are still some within that organization who are confident that it will get done. But I've been told from enough people that are not too confident that it'll get done. And so, again, with each passing day, it seems more and more unlikely that it's going to happen. Not that it won't happen, but seems unlikely.
And again, we talked about a no-brainer. And if they're that far apart, what worries me for Illawarra fans, right, if that doesn't happen, is there are some teams that still have some money and some opportunities around in Australia, in the NBA.
Don't say it.
Again, this is based on nothing that I've heard. I'm just trying to put pieces together. If teams that might have some more money, and we talk about what the Wildcats need, well, that could kind of change things in there if they've got some money up. What happens with Jack White and Luke Travers? If they go down and they're not coming back for Melbourne United, Bish Creek doesn't come back for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix if they're going to play Jonah Bolden at the five and the Breakers. So there are other teams out there.
36ers need a full man who can maybe slide off to the five.
That was my next one. Yeah.
Perfect it happened.
So there are some other teams that might have a bit more cash. So if I'm Illawarra fans, I'd be a little worried. But hopefully he just seemed to suit Justin Tatum the way that his style of play was. And he shone in NBL 24. So it would be tough to see that happen. But it's a professional business.
Other than that, they're pretty much set, aren't they, the Illawarra Hawks? Although they are looking, of course, for a point guard.
They're looking for a point guard. Otherwise, when it comes to their bench and some of their local guys, they are finished. So it's basically seeing the growth of someone like Lachie Olbrich, see what happens with him, the growth of Sam Frohling. We saw how much he excelled toward the end of last season in the playoffs. The growth of these guys will, I think, determine where this team goes. We always talk about how the floor of the locals is what we're basically determining the outcomes of teams on. It'll be the case for this one.
Let's finish with the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. Mitch Creek's season in China is now over. Jordan Hunter is just about to finish up in Latvia, playing in the championship series there as well. So I guess we're working on the logic that they're both going to be here for round one of NBL 25. Are we?
Are you? It's a wait and see with these guys. Again, we've spoken a lot.
You say that, and it is worth prefacing that, and the Phoenix have been strong in that. But as we come to record this, they are here, right? They are going to play in NBL 25. Yeah. So that's the way it works, and everybody's under the assumption. What offers come in the next couple of months is a completely different story. But the Phoenix don't even know that. Nobody knows that. So one, you can kind of prepare for it, but two, you've also got to realize this is the lay of the land.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like an offer from an Asian country for either of those guys is imminent. that doesn't mean it's not possible.
Yeah.
Well, the fact that Mitch Creek didn't play a lot probably helps in that respect, doesn't it? Because he didn't get a full chance to show his potential because of the import rules in the CBA.
Potentially. He had a really... It was a unique situation with him on that team and the import rules in China as well. So all that... I disregard all of that when it comes to a potential contract in China for next season.
Yeah.
And then Jordy Hunter had a solid season in Sydney, really solid season in Latvia. And so he is someone who it would surprise me if there aren't offers from Japanese teams in the near future.
Just based on putting everything together, not talking to anybody, what I'm seeing eventuate is that I think Mitch Creek is probably more likely to play in NBL 25. The signing of Derek Walton Jr. and Nathan Sobey is going to entice Mitch Creek to play alongside, right? He wants to bring a championship to the heartland and trying to build that there. Jordy Hunter is the one to watch, right? If you had to pick one of them, Olga, who's more likely not to be here, it's probably Jordy Hunter because of how enticing the big local is. So that's the one to watch. And that's why I thought that, okay, if they're trying to put the other puzzle pieces around this depth chart, then we haven't spoken about Marcus Leon on a marketplace, which doesn't feel right. But that's
almost got to the end.
that backup import spot that you could sign now that'll be cheaper, but he's a starting caliber player in the NBL, that if you do lose Jordy Hunter, well, that's an easy slide up, and you kind of bring in a young local behind that. That's what I could kind of see eventuate.
They're the obvious gaps on the Phoenix depth chart, aren't they?
And it's funny because last season, Marcus Lee was signed as insurance for Will Magne, and he almost wasn't really needed.
Yeah.
This season, what happens if Will Magne gets an NBA contract?
Yeah.
And then they don't have that insurance. The Southeast Melbourne Phoenix seem... potentially could do their due diligence, bring him in and have insurance if Jordy Hunter leaves.
And another name, I mean, Craig Moller for the Phoenix as well, with what happens with him. He's about to be starting to play basketball again. There's been conversations with not just the Phoenix, some other teams around, and I think there's another Europe offer on the table as well. Well, forget about what happened last year. Before he got hurt, I mean, the Phoenix fell down after. He was massive for them to have those impact players. You look at any team that's won a title, you can select the impactful player who can dominate a game without touching the ball. And that was him. And that was what he did defensively. Whether he ends up with the Phoenix, I'm not sure. But there's a name, or there's other clubs around that have shown interest, but it'll be another one to watch.
He's someone who I would like to see get another chance in the league. Other names out there that are doing well, Roman Sialupa, doing really well in the NBL 1.
Yeah.
I think there's a good chance that we see him in the NBL next season.
Really?
In some capacity. Mm. Other guys who are out there doing really well, Emmett Nah is leading the way for... the only undefeated men's team in the NBL 1 competition right now in Mackay. He is someone who is clearly an NBL.
There's a spot somewhere for
him. There's a spot for Emmett Nah somewhere in the NBL.
Yeah.
And then even guys who we've almost forgot about, but Kyle Adnan and some of these players who are...
they're NBL players.
NBL veterans who have sort of just been forgotten because teams move on and they lean into other guys. But he's someone who I think... maybe there's a roster spot out there for him.
So there's a sweep. As it looks at the end of May, as we mentioned, June's going to be a really interesting month. And then the start of July is when it will all really start to fill out as we head towards NBL 25. Great work, both of you two.
Thank you,
Jack.
And we will do it again soon. Thank you for being with us. We'll catch you next time on The Marketplace.